I know that we're all getting a little bit hungry, so I will try to make my talk as brief as possible to allow for questions afterwards. We're going to go in a little bit of a different direction, but we're going to actually get in on the topic of planetary formation and how the solar system came to be towards the end of my presentation. What we're going to be talking about is the SOFIA, the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. SOFIA consists of a 2.7-meter telescope that is housed in the engineered cavity in the back of the modified Boeing 747. I should also add that this is an international partnership, which Dr. Worden had mentioned earlier in his talk. And the telescope, which is 17 tons, if you can imagine, is housed in the back of the aircraft. And it's been engineered in such a way that it is fully exposed to the outside atmosphere during observations when it's flying. Now, there is a pressurized bulkhead which separates the open door cavity from where the people reside. And on that same side is where the science instrument is placed. So there's actually a light tube that shuffles the light coming in from the telescope into the science instrument. And the science instrument can be swapped out on a regular basis. And of course, here's where all the scientists are gathered. I'll show you some real pictures in a minute. On this side of this graphic is where the cavity would be. So this is the primary mirror. That's the large mirror that you saw in the previous image, the tiny little secondary mirror. And on this side would be where the scientists reside. And right here would be where the instrument itself would be located. This is that light tube that I was referring to earlier. So this is how SOFIA works in a nutshell. Light comes in from some distant target. It reflects off and focuses by the primary mirror. The infrared light hits the first mirror and goes off to the infrared instrument. But the visible light actually passes through that first mirror, hits the second mirror, and is reflected down into a what is essentially a guider. Because often we're going to be looking at things that you can't see visibly. They're only infrared, and we may be doing spectroscopy, so you don't even actually get an image that you can guide carefully on. So to hold the telescope as steady as possible, you might actually need to look at nearby stars to make sure that, you know, the telescope is really, it's very consistent in its pointing. So this is just a picture of installation of a science instrument, so you can actually see the light tube right there. Eventually, you know, it'll be mated to the bulkhead here, and then people will be able to take data with this instrument. This instrument is just getting ready to fly towards the end of March is when we're actually going to be taking some real data for the first time with this instrument. It's called BRAVE. It's one of our German partners' instruments. This is just another picture of what it looks like inside when all the action is going on. These are scientists, the science team and instrument team. Mission Ops is back here controlling the telescope. And one of the really cool things about flying on this plane is during observations when the telescope is pointed where it needs to be pointed, you'll notice a little bit of turbulence. In the stratosphere where this plane flies, there's not a lot of turbulence, but every now and then you get a little bit of turbulence. And you will see this counterweight of the backside of the telescope going like this. And it'll actually go like this too, in three dimensions. And you think, oh my gosh, the telescope is going all over the place. No, that's the aircraft wiggling around the telescope. The telescope is locked onto its target solid, and it's just a matter of relativity. It's us doing the movie, not the telescope. All right, so SOFIA, being an airborne observatory, shares characteristics and advantages of both ground-based and space-based observatories. Its large mirror over its predecessor, the KAO, the Kuiper Airborne Observatory, which flew for about 20 years and then was decommissioned to allow SOFIA to start its development, brings about the advantage of a crisper image. You know, just large mirror gives you a much clearer image. And also, it allows SOFIA, relative to the KAO, to look at much fainter targets. Now, because SOFIA flies at a much higher altitude than ground-based observatories are located, it allows SOFIA to get above 99% of the water vapor in Earth's atmosphere White vapor is a bad thing for infrared astronomers because the white vapor tends to block out the infrared light coming from an astronomical source. So you can see here on the ground, there are large swaths of wavelength that are completely blocked out. You wouldn't be able to see targets at those wavelengths. But on Sophia, yeah, there's still some remaining lines. There's still some atmosphere above the aircraft, but it opens up a wide range of wavelength space to do your observations. Now, Sophia is also mobile, half telescope will fly. So it allows us to do really unique things that you can't do with a ground-based telescope. For example, to participate in occultation events where you have to put the telescope at a particular coordinate at a particular time to catch the shadow as some object in our outer solar system, for example, passes in front of a background star. That kind of observation allows us to sample the sizes of objects in the outer solar system, as well as see if there are atmospheres associated with those objects. So one aspect of Sophia that makes it gives it an edge over space-based observatories is that it comes home every night, so we're able to actually change out the instruments, and we're able to upgrade the instruments over time to keep up with new technologies, take advantages of more sensitive detectors over time. And also, because it is an aircraft, we actually have more power we can allocate to instruments than we would be if we were shooting this up as a one-off space mission. All right, so also, Sophia is capable of observing over a really large range of wavelengths, but because, again, it comes home every night, we don't have to worry about putting a fixed amount of cryogen. Infrared observing requires cooling or cryogen. We don't have to worry about, running out of cryogen because we can refill it every night. We are able to go a very, very long time. So Sophia currently has a baseline of 20 years, and that will allow a lot of interesting follow-up, monitoring of targets over an unprecedented amount of time with these wavelengths. Another advantage over space-based is that we're actually able to look very closely, angularly speaking, to the sun. So objects that are of particular interest in this regime would be comets, which are giving off most of their materials when they're really close to the sun, and also the inner planets like Venus, that still have some mysteries associated with the chemistry in their atmospheres that perhaps Sophia will be able to shed light on. And then finally, Sophia's a plane. People can actually fly on it, and this allows it to serve as sort of an ambassador for astronomy. We fully expect there to be reporters and educators that fly on the plane. Those educators will take what they've learned back to their students, so everyone benefits from this sort of hands-on approach that we will be taking. All right, so this is just real quickly a picture that you may have seen in the news. This is our very first science image that was taken back in December compared to the near-infrared invisible light. This is a target in Orion. Now, this is sort of a little bit of introductory astronomy, so forgive me for those of you who know all of this, but rainbow represents kind of like a crude spectrum, splitting apart the visible light into its constituent colors, but of course we know that there's much more light out there than what we can see on either side, ultraviolet and beyond, and on here there's infrared. So it's towards the red side of the rainbow that Sophia is actually optimized to observe that. Now, wavelengths define color. So think of wavelength as the distance between two troughs and a light wave. Now, of course, what we can see is a tiny component of what's actually out there in terms of light. And again, Sophia is optimized to look in this wide range of wavelengths in the infrared. I would just say that the infrared wavelengths are about the size of a human hair. That's kind of like the wavelength that we'll be looking at. Now, why do you care about different wavelengths? Well, you can look at one object at different wavelengths, and it gives you a vastly different view, leading to clues about what's going on in that object. So this is sort of a dramatic example of how, depending on what you use to look at it, you can see a very different thing. So when it comes to infrared astronomy, however, there's a couple of advantages to infrared astronomy. One is that you can, um, you, you can probe temperature variations within otherwise cool veins. So, you know, optically, I can't tell who's hot and who's cold here, but at infrared wavelengths, it's very obvious. And if you want to have some fun, just go over and play around with the thermal infrared camera that's already been set up. I've noticed some of you doing that already, so I won't dwell on this too much because the camera is set up. And I also should point out that there's a really nice model of Sophia over there, too, if you want to kind of play around with that and get a feel for how the cavity operates, which I didn't really get into very much. Okay, I think I'm going to just talk to this. I'm not going to, well, let's just let it go. I can talk while I'm talking. I let it go while I'm talking. So what this video is an optical image that zooms in, and then it shows you how it looks at near infrared, and then finally it ends in far infrared light. And one of the other advantages of infrared light is not only is it a good temperature probe, but infrared light, by its very nature, is able to zip right through dust particles that would otherwise obscure our ability to see that object visibly. And some of the most interesting objects that we want to look at, which is star-forming regions, to understand how our own sun came to be and the planet systems around our sun, unfortunately, they tend, in the early phase, they tend to be totally shrouded by dust. So you just see sort of this black, dark thing out there visibly, but Sophia will be able to see right down into the heart of where the action is going on and help us provide more insight into the mechanisms of star formation. And also, one other thing is that the dust itself starts glowing at a particular infrared wavelength, and we can actually map out these dust filaments, which are likely very important to planetary formation and other such processes. Okay, so very quickly, let me just touch on some of the science that Sophia's going to do. I've already talked about comets. I've already talked about Venus's mysterious chemistry and its atmosphere. One of the other things I'd like to point out is that Sophia will produce the sharpest images ever obtained between the 30 and 60 micron mid-infrared region. And that will allow us to distinguish between closely embedded stars down in a star-forming cluster. And that will help us to basically take a population synthesis, a census of you know, what kinds of stars form at what sizes, rather than have them all kind of blur together and never really knowing how many stars are down in there. Now, I want to end on a really other very cool science that is relevant to a planet formation, and that is Sophia's ability to do high spectral resolution observing. And this went too fast, let's go back here. So I just want to point out that molecules, they rotate and they vibrate. And in doing so, they either absorb or release energies at very discrete wavelengths. They produce these sort of lines that you see here. And we can use that process to probe the forming disk that around a star where planets are being formed. So, for example, water is a molecule. It exhibits particular vibrational rotational features like we just talked about. And so by looking at a star that is suspected to have a disk around it, where you know, the planetary formation process has started, we can look for features that are produced by ice. We can look for other features that are produced by water vapor. And simply by the shape of the line, we have such high spectral resolution, we'll be able to figure out a double dip from the single dip. We'll be able to figure out the shape. And that tells us where in the disk that particular being is located. And why this is relevant is somewhere between the vapor and the ice, there's a regime that we call this the snow line. That's where liquid water can form, and I don't have to tell you why that's important. Okay, so that does it for me. I'll entertain any questions.
Thanks, Ben. Okay, any questions?
I'm Heather. I tweeted.